Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 234. You believe that, Chip? 234 episodes.
Wow, and that's congrats to you. That says a lot about you, Ron, and so congratulations.
That,
that's awesome. What a great job you do.
Well, thank you guys for listening. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment, you know, on these episodes. It helps me just continue to highlight the great people that are in our profession doing fantastic things. I also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Iron Grip for sponsoring this episode. Iron Grip's just, they've been with me at every weight room that I've ever been in. I think the world of the company, think the world of the product. And if you're in the market, bars and dumbbells and plates and everything, you can't go wrong with Iron Grip. This week I'm joined by Coach Chip Sigmund. Is a guy that I just have so much respect for. He's been in this field for, you know, 30 plus years. He's a strength and conditioning coach, wellness coordinator at Europa Sports Products, but he's been a little bit everywhere. But Coach, you know, you've been a mentor to me for a long time. You've done so much for this field and this profession, and I'm just excited to have you on the show.
Ron, I'm flattered that you would ask me. It's great to be here. Can't say enough. So I thank you. I'm humbled that you would have me.
Oh, awesome, Coach. Well, like I mentioned, you've been a lot of places. I mean, going back to 78 and a high school coach to UNC Chapel Hill, App State, the Charlotte Hornets, NBA, Charlotte Sting, WNBA, private set, you're in private sector. Which one of those stops along this storied career taught you the most about coaching?
Ooh, good, great question, Ron. You know, at Appalachian State, being, you know, I was assistant at Carolina under, we were the very, Jerry Paul Mary was with me, very first strength conditioning staff at full time at the University of North Carolina. Mike Marks was the head guy. He had come from Alabama under Bear Bryant. Bear Bryant, he said, why'd you leave Alabama? He said, Bear Bryant wasn't hooked on the strength conditioning. He thought it was a little voodoo involved. True story. But Mike was real. So, you know, you're assistant, but at Appalachian State, you've got your first head job, and you're learning on the go because this is in 1984, 82 at Carolina and 84 at Appalachian State, the very first strength conditioning coach there, very first in the Southern Conference, and I had a lot to prove.
Sure.
Mike Stone, the exercise professor, exercise science, Dr. Harold O'Brien.
Yeah.
They were there. I had a lot of pressure and fear sometimes, Ron, is a great motivator.
Yeah,
and
right.
They had started linear periodization or really popularized it. So I had no choice but to follow that and learned a lot from it. So just learning from sun up to sundown what hard work is all about, trying to prove something, I think, there. But then you go to the Charlotte Hornets, and then it's, as you know, it's a whole different, you know, and professionally dealing with that athlete. I would say at App, great coaches. I worked under Mac Brown hired me. Then it was Sparky Woods. We won two Southern Conference football championships, and then working under the great Jerry Moore.
Yeah.
And then I got the job with the Hornets in 90. So I've been very, very blessed but it's a learning, a curve at each place.
Yeah, no question. I mean, you learn everywhere. Coaches that are listening, I think it would all agree that you learn at every stop. But I think there's always a spot that kind of holds a little bit special place in your heart, a little bit where you felt like you really kind of matured and grew up as a coach. And I agree with you. Oftentimes, that's when You become a head strength coach for the first time because, I mean, ultimately to me, that's when you start the job. You know, as an assistant, you're running somebody else's program. You're able to point to somebody else when it comes to accountability and discipline and setting the culture and those types of things. But until you become the head guy and you're sitting in that chair and all those things stop with you, that's the difference maker. But I think something that you said in there that I really liked was, you know, you never really quite feel like you're ready for the next opportunity. You know, you got to be a little uncomfortable. There's got to be a little fear there.
Yeah.
You know, when you're going into it, because that's when you get out of your comfort zone. Same thing we tell our athletes. Mm-hmm. You got to get out of your comfort zone. But I really appreciate you sharing that. I mean, you don't have a career 30 plus years in the business without making mistakes. What's one of the biggest mistakes you made and kind of how you learned from it?
Well, I tell people, Ron, I have probably failed in life more than I have succeeded.
I think we all have.
That's because you just try so much and you do it. It says, my goodness, and don't be afraid to fail. That's what's people – don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone. So, it's not so what if you fail. I mean, that's big, but, boy, you learn from it and you go on. You don't try not to make the same mistake twice. I love what Joe Cannon with the Panthers always says. He says, you know, don't have a I got you moment.
Yeah.
You're always prepared, especially coaches, football coaches asking you about a player that you're always ready. And so the big failures or even the small ones at the places I've been, relationships and so forth, you just kind of pick yourself up and you learn from it. Don't be afraid to admit your mistakes. You didn't fail on purpose. God, I got to do that again. Boy, that wasn't right. I think you always look in the mirror. Don't be afraid in staff meetings. Coach, I was responsible for that.
Right.
I'm the one. No, I look myself in the mirror. Don't be afraid if you're a assistant or a head or something. Coach, I'll take responsibility for that. That was my bust. And you go on and you be a man about it. You don't hide behind your mistakes and failures. But also your successes, you're very proud of them. But
right.
I think we talked when we first started talking this morning, introduction, you stay humble.
Yeah.
You better because this profession will
get humble you.
A lot. the failures, you know, with athletes, I remember at Appalachian, I was too strict on the diet, the training table, about what we were having. And back then in the early 80s, you know, you're talking about training tables where it was a hit and miss.
Yeah, right.
And I just didn't have enough calories on there for them. And so I felt bad about that. You know, some periodization not working, you know, bench presses not being where they should be. But do we know that, hey, the overhead press is probably more important, and other things. But yeah, those things, you look back where I could have done something different. But that's in every situation. And that still applies today and what I do today.
Well, I could agree with you more. I think owning your mistakes, I mean, what a great – yeah, absolutely. I love that you brought that up because I remember noticing it with my own son and my kids where, you know, every time that I want to bring something up, they want to point to 10 other reasons why, you know, it's not their fault. And, you know, you're absolutely right. For there to be progress, you have to own those so you can grow from them. And
I like Coach Wooden's two sets of threes. No lying, no stealing, no cheating, and don't make excuses. And
yeah.
There's no substitute. You just don't make excuses. You look yourself in the mirror every day.
And as long as you're looking at those mistakes as opportunities to grow and you try to avoid making the same mistake twice, that's great.
Well, exactly.
You know, especially when you're young in the field, you know. You know, you started in 1978 coaching. You've seen this field grow tremendously, and it's guys like you that obviously that grew this profession to what it is. What is maybe one great thing about the profession now, and what's one thing that you shake your head about?
Another good question. The great thing is the technology. If you don't know something, you've got something at your fingertips.
Yeah.
The knowledge that you have is right there. You know, I'm listening to you on the way to work, I'm listening to a podcast of yours. I love them. My favorite though, Ron, is podcast 100, where they interviewed you, by the way.
Appreciate that, Coach.
And the strength coach for the Citadel, he's a superstar. I believe it's
Donnell.
Boucher.
Yep.
If I pronounce that correctly.
Yep,
what Boucher. A superstar of the profession.
Yep, I agree.
And a big fan. I met him at the Sornex clinic and just complimented me what he's doing. But the technology is just incredible. What we're doing now.
Yeah.
We didn't have that. You know, we couldn't. I remember my first strength conditioning clinic at Appalachian State. I had Mike Gentry, and we send out all the information about the clinic flyers. There was no internet.
Right.
You know, so the tech, you know, and so, and then again, you have one of the bad things again is the technology.
Yeah, agreed.
You have internet experts out there. I really respect strength coaches. We're both now in our own business. I have a website, you have one, and I respect coaches, and all of them, don't get me wrong, that work hard day in and day out, 10, 12 hours a day. But the coaches I really respect are people like yourself and others have worked also with teams, because team is, you know, organization is the key.
Right. Agreed.
Putting the program together, that's kind of simple. It's organization when you've got 100 athletes.
That's exactly
right. Appalachian State, I worked with every team from sunup to sundown. It was just not football.
Right.
But you've got to be careful what you're – I believe in listening to everything, Ron. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But you've got to really be able to distinguish, assimilate what is good and what is bad and what is just good common sense work and a good work ethic and common sense, you know, to what you believe and why – know what you believe and why you believe it. I'll get on websites with Mark Ripito, got his new book, Starting Strength, awesome. But also kind of switch gears a little bit and Juggernaut Strength.
Yeah.
But Chad Wesley Smith, their philosophy is a little different.
Sure.
And that's okay. But you've got to be able, okay, are you going to start off with your athletes by doing high reps or fives?
Right.
And so you've got to really be careful what you come across. Oh, that can be exciting. But, okay, how does this work in the real world with your athletes? Now, some of it is a trial and error, of course.
Yeah.
But technology can be very good technology, and I like going to sources who I really know, people like yourself. You know, as I said, I was visiting my daughter goes to Liberty University, and another great man I love going to visit. And I met, as I told you earlier, Bill Gillespie,
yep.
Strength coach for Liberty.
Phenomenal guy.
Go FBS next year. Him and his staff treated me and my wife and daughter like royalty. And just great man of faith. Nobody would rather lead than my son, which I don't have one, $2. And,
right.
Which I love dearly. But leading, you know, those men. But you find reputable men you kind of trust. You don't mind giving them a call, talking to them.
Right.
You may have different viewpoints. That's okay.
Right.
I believe this. That's okay. And as long as we've been in it, Ron, boy, the things I have tried and failed, but tried and succeeded too.
Agreed.
Well, I think that's so important to try to assimilate the good and the bad, and that's in every part of your life.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I you know, it's funny, I just wrote down a bunch of things, but technology, I mean, I go back, and as crazy as it sounds, I mean, I go back to when I first got in and I was writing 270 letters. You know, it wasn't email. You couldn't just drop an email, and I had a spreadsheet I found the other day of just like five or six emails that I had found at that time. But then you talk about having a good filter. You know, I think one thing that I did early on in my career was I wrote a paper on every topic in strength and conditioning, speed, nutrition. And basically I just put what my idea of, you know, I'd research, everything that I had. And actually what I started with was those 270 letters, I was asking for manuals. I'd get the manuals and I'd rip them apart. I'd put the nutrition section here and the speed section here and the strength section here. And then I would, once I had a big binder of it, I would write a paper as to what I think it should be, you know. And then from that point on, everything that I would read, I would compare back to what my idea, you know, what my thoughts are on the topic. And I think that that's, you know, so important, is that you got to kind of find what you believe in, what you identify with, and then challenge yourself by going to a juggernaut or going to a Ripito or going to where and saying, okay, well, what about this? What about that? And what do I think about this? And being aware of it as well. But I'm glad you brought all that up.
That's what's made you successful, Ron. You go above and beyond. You go put in the extra mile. The things that sometimes that you don't want to do, oh God, rather that you do.
Yeah,
you, exactly. When you don't want it, you took time to write all those things down. That's what the little things, paying attention to the details. If you do that, the big things, that'll take care of themselves.
Well, you've been also able to adapt with the times, and you've been able to kind of, you know, we talked off camera a little bit, but, you know, one of the things that I so appreciate about you is, you know, every time I go to a conference, we're at a conference together, you're in the front row, you're taking notes like you're a undergrad student, you know, and you're just a little passionate. You said earlier, I think, that you have a relentless pursuit for, you know, for knowledge. I love that about you. You know, what advice would you have now? I mean, you know, if you were just starting in the field today with all this technology and all these clinics and all these different things available to you, what would you do? What would be the first three things you would do to kind of make a name for yourself, to kind of build a platform for you to have success in the strength and conditioning?
Oh, another good question. And the three things I think that's going to make you successful is you're contacting people. I got this from Mike Gentry, a great strength and conditioning coach, East Carolina, Virginia Tech, where he always went to go visit people. And he listened. He listened to what other people were doing. And you know, Mike has his doctors.
Yeah,
he didn't want to call you Dr. Gentry. He says, hey, just call me Mike.
Yeah.
I think you stay humble, but we talk about it. But contacting, going out and visit, seeing what other people were doing. Jerry Moore, head football coach at Appalachian, before he beat Michigan the national championship, that one year they were thinking about, I don't know, they were questioning Coach Moore. He drove to LSU. He drove all around the Southeast visiting people.
Yeah.
Then he beats Michigan and wins three national championships.
Wow.
So contacting people is a key. And then get a philosophy. I think you writing down those things that you believe. Get a philosophy of what you believe and why you believe what you believe. Not only in your profession, but in other things of life. That can be in religion, your faith. You know, people don't realize, you know, people are all over the place nowadays.
Yeah.
And so you, knowing what you believe and why you believe and living a life, none of that makes a difference, Ron. You can have all the knowledge in the world. You can be the best strength coach, but here's the base. Here's the foundation of your success. You have it. Bill Gillespie, Mike Gentry, Jerry Palmieri is your character and your integrity. And knowing that people can trust you, you're a family man, you're a man of faith. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You know that. When I'm telling you things, just reinforcing what you already know, buddy. I've known you long enough.
And
just caring about you may. I'll admit, I write everything down because I'm not the smartest cookie in the jar.
You and me both.
And I write everything down. But you've got to stay humble, and just continue your pursuit of excellence, what you're trying to pursue is so very important.
You mentioned humble about, you know, four or five times in this, and I couldn't agree with you more. I also know, just like, you know, human nature and sinful nature and all those things, you know, that pride, you know, it's a sin. It's something that it's very easily can creep into your life, especially when you have success and you coach at high, you know, big time programs like a Charlotte Hornets or the University of Tennessee or places that we've coached. When you're faced with that, how do you stay humble other than a humbling situation, you know, where you just, maybe you get, you know, knocked upside your head. How do you walk into that situation knowing that there's the potential for this to happen? How, you know, here's how I approach it.
Yeah, it's a good question. Again, you know, well, number one, I stay humble because I remember my past failures, knowing that what some of the things, holy cow, Chip. And just, I think it's so important in staying humble is knowing that here's the deal. There's people out there a heck of a lot smarter than you.
Yep.
I was in bodybuilding years ago in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And when I was training, I would train on a Saturday night, or because everybody else partying, so I get the jump on people. Right. Sunday morning before church training to get the jump on people. And that's how I got into a little strength conditioning, and we can talk about that later. That's another story. But I think it's so important to knowing you're trying to outwork people. There's people out there a heck of a lot smarter than you. So you're trying to gain all the knowledge that you possibly can.
Right.
One thing that I want to get away from that a little bit, if you don't mind me saying so, Ron, that how it's changed, how strength conditioning has changed over the years. When I went to Appalachian State, Ron, you've done the same thing now. I've read your book.
Appreciate
it. Is that I started out at Appalachian. Max said, Chip, we cannot pay you. We'll give you a place under the field house where the referees dress. There was no heat. the assistant athletic director gave me an electric heater.
In Boone, North Carolina.
Yes.
Get a little chilly.
I can give you training table, Chip. I would train the players so late that I'd walk up the training table, it would be closed, and I would go to bed hungry because, like you, didn't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Now – and so, and when I did go full time, it was $21,000, okay, which was pretty good back then at 1987. But when I went full time, or 86, because I started in 84, so I think it was 86. But now, and the pressure was still, you know, you had to do your job, of course. Now, Ron, when you're making $200,000,
yeah.
It better be 24/7, 365 days a year.
Yep.
And so you better know you can't take a day off. That's what I do like about Nick Saban.
Right.
He doesn't. He knows the body is naturally lazy.
Yeah.
I'm that way. I think that's what, and getting back to what keeps me humble, I know how lazy I can be sometimes. So I drive myself. And there's got to be a balance with family. I have two girls that are away, one working in Orlando school, and then Sydney, my youngest, at Liberty. And
yeah,
I'm still working at 62 years old for them.
Yeah, sure.
Which I enjoy. And I'm so blessed to be here at Europa Sports Products with two guys, Eric Hillman and Jeff Compton, who, hey, Chip, you can run your business out of our place, just Europa Sports, just take care of our employees. Europa is the largest distributor of nutritional supplements in the world. We have a 3,000 square foot weight room. It's just incredible. Here, right in smack dab in the middle of the Europa Sports Products, the building. So I'm very blessed to be able to run a business out of here. So in staying humble, it's just, and I don't have hours, but I'm here. I got here at 7 this morning. I will leave at probably 6:37 at night. Now, I can take some time off in the middle of the afternoon if I need to.
Right.
But I care about the employees. At 11:30, I've got to go out and stretch, take our warehouse employees through dynamic stretching.
That's awesome.
Greatest people in the world, man.
That's awesome.
And they appreciate it. So, but then I'll have Tiffany Mitchell coming in. She is a two-time SEC Player of the Year basketball.
Wow.
Played at South Carolina. She WNBA, Indiana Fever. She's coming off a knee injury. So trained some top athletes, Olympic swimmer, Michael Chadwick. You may know a quarterback, Oklahoma State, Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, sure.
Trains here in the summer. And so very fortunate, but also some personal training. I'm very interested, Ron, if you don't mind me going this route.
Hello.
I'm very interested in sarcopenia, the wasting away of muscle fiber as we get older. I train a lot of 40, 50, 60-year-old men.
Right.
And after this session, I've got to go out and train somebody who's 64.
Wow.
Obtaining muscle is critical at an older age, as you age. Obtaining as much muscle as you can.
Right.
It's critical. So I'm very interested in that, very interested in nutrition, sports nutrition. The learning process never stops, Ron. I'm very humble. I'll tell you a story. Since I write a lot on nutrition, I wanted to get certified as a sports nutritionist.
Yeah.
2 years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, two and a half, I got my certification from the ISSN, International Society of Sports Nutrition. And it's the hardest exam and certification I've ever taken. They suggest 6 months of study. I studied a little over 2 years. That's how. But see, I'm 60 at the time. The learning process never stops. And something I'm very proud of.
Right.
And I'm not bragging or anything. Because, hey, it took me 2 years. Most people 6 months.
Great.
So, but the learning process never stops. But nutrition plays such an important role. You look, Ron, and you know this. You look at the football players or athletes of the 60s and 70s and 80s and look at their bodies, especially their glutes.
Yeah.
Nothing. I mean, you know. Now 90s and the 2000 and the 2017s, look at the bodies of our athletes. Remember where we used to put on the hip pads?
Yeah.
In football, that tailbone pad, the hip pads.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
Yeah.
Their hips are so big. Their glutes are so big. None of the NFL guys wear that. They don't even wear knee pads.
Right.
Close them down. The body, but we've done this because of the science of this is how far it's come.
Sure.
The science of strength conditioning and nutrition. We know so much more about, we didn't hear about protein synthesis in the 80s. Now, branched chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine and valine, leucine can do the job all by itself. Protein is right. Critical. And you take creatine. So I'm getting way off on now, but that's kind of my passion for it. That's how far this profession has come. And we're developing, you know, incredible, you know, athletes.
Right. Resources. Bodies. Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of...
Yeah, I think, I mean, again, tons of data out there. Really, I mean, just a wealth of information as always. But, you know, I think going back to kind of being humble, I think, you know, one of the things that you mentioned there, this is a quote from a scout with Kansas City that's a good friend, but he always talks about, you know, being a PhD, being poor, hungry, and desperate, you know.
it forces you to
kind of really put some focus. But, I mean, you go back to your passion. You know, you have a strong passion for nutrition, obviously, right now. That's driving you. You got a passion for helping people make an impact in their lives, and that drives you. And, you know, I go back to my first job at the University of South Florida. I made $9,000 as a head strength coach. And, you know, I did the same job there for $9,000 as I did at the University of Tennessee for $275,000. You know, I mean, it's, you know, that's the type of passion and kind of commitment that you have to the task. And just like, you know, just like anything, just like tithing, you know, if you put in the effort, you know, God will reward you, you know. I think, and, you know, I think that that's, you know, if as long as it's not about the money, you know, if you get in for money, then you better choose a different profession, because this,
exactly,
this isn't it. But I think the last thing you said there was, you know, getting outside of your comfort zone. I mean, there's a verse in the Bible talks about, you don't throw a light into the light, you throw a light into the darkness, you know. And it's easy to coach the freaking Mason Rudolphs of the world that are just great athletes that, you know, you don't have to do a whole lot too. But then when you work at that 64-year-old, you better know your stuff. Or,
yeah,
you know, what I had to find out was, you know, that I wasn't a very good coach was when I had to coach my own son. And, you know, and he was having trouble jump roping. And I'm like, what do you mean? You don't know how to jump rope, you know, and trying to break that down. But I think, you know, it's such an important thing. And I'm glad you brought just being humble in this profession, because you're right. If you don't go into that with that and look at things as a learning opportunity, you will get humbled in this profession very, very quickly.
Certainly will.
I'm 20 years in the profession. You're 30 years in the profession. You talk about, you know, potential retirement down the line, all those types of things. How do you, what do you want, or what should be the legacy of a strength coach? You know, when people, when you walk away from the field and you hang up your whistle, you know, what should be said?
Ron, when I go back to Appalachian State, I'm going up with our owner of Europa tomorrow night to see Appalachian State play. They play a Thursday night game. I know I'll see some old players, hopefully, that right. I coach. Sometimes, Ron, when I see them, I don't know if they're going to hit me or hug me because I was so hard on them. But they know I cared.
Right.
Because you want to prepare these athletes for life.
Yeah.
I like what Bill Gillespie says. If we just develop football players, we haven't done our job at Liberty. And I'm sure that's it. So caring about athletes, caring so much that you're going to prepare them for life, the adversities of life. How do you deal? An athlete, when good times are going, they just feel great. How do you feel when you're not doing well? I think that's a key role of a strength coach when the team's losing. You take Jeff Connor, National Strength and Conditioning Coach of the Year at East Carolina. Now he's having one heck of a season. But you know what? He's just as good.
Right.
And he's probably doing a better job now after losing because he's trying to keep the athletes up.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that's what really life's about. It's not all winning. You know, you want to prepare a person. How about if they lose their job and they're trying to support a family? How do they respond to that?
Right.
So I think just in caring about athletes, knowing that you cared about them so much, you made them better, a better person. Just not a better athlete. Yeah, they're going to get that. But when I finished a session with my athletes, when I left the Charlotte Hornets, they went to New Orleans. I decided not to go. And I went to Ortho Carolina to work in speed agility program, assist with physical therapy. Always finish my athletes working the session. Okay, guys, be a better student, be a better person, and be a better athlete. And so they did better athlete by performing in our speed agility session. But go back and study to be a better student, be a better person. What books are you reading? Did you compliment somebody? Who have I blessed today?
Yeah.
And did I hold a door open for someone that I, high school students, did you help your teacher? Do you defend your teacher when they're having a hard day or somebody does something?
Right.
So just caring about athletes, caring about people is so very important, especially in the world we live in today.
Couldn't agree with you more. Couldn't agree. I always talk about the weight room being a laboratory for life. You know, and you come to the weight room, you have a plan. You get smacked in the face with a hard workout. You have to work together. You have to handle successes. You have to handle defeats. You have to, you know, set new goals, and you're doing all that within a single workout. You know, and that's, I mean, what better breeding ground for what life's going to throw at you than doing that every single day? And so I couldn't agree with you more. Coach, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I remember when I was at Appalachian State, head football coach Sparky Woods. You know, we were just talking in his office one day, and he said, you know, Chip, you know, you can push him and push him, but sometimes those football players, they really think that they're working hard.
Right.
They think, hey, you've got to reach out and give them that 100%. Let them know and give them the confidence. Give players confidence. It's not always belittling somebody, but he talked about lift those players up. And John Wooden says, well, you know, you can't give 120%. You only give 100. I mean, that's it. And I think he was talking just about that, about, you know, having athletes, and everybody's different, reaching their full potential, give them, he talked about giving them the confidence to do so. Don't, you know, you got to know when to get on them, but you know what? You got to know when to put your arm around them.
Absolutely.
You know, because they may not have a mom or dad at home, or you may be their father. I've had so many former athletes come up to me, Coach, you were my guy I went to. And you know, Ron, athletes really go to the strength conditioning coach.
Agreed.
More they do the conditioning staff.
Yep. No, I agree 100% with that. Give us a book, app, website recommendation.
I just bought The Starting Strength, Mark Ripito.
That's good.
I like Off the Beat. I like John Gordon's The Energy Bus. You got to bring the energy every day. Stephen Moore, Good as Dead. The prisoners in the Pacific Theater of World War II, the relentless agony being prisoners of war. And there's one more, Ron, that you may be familiar with that, boy, is so good. You've done a great job with CEO Strength Coach.
I appreciate it.
Boy, I love you. Thanks, you're a great writer. You have a talent. I've written also a book on basketball.
Yeah.
And a long time ago.
Couple of them, right?
No. But what a great, you know, I couldn't put it down. And I've taken so much from it. Thank you for writing that, because I'm going to tell you something. A lot of coaches knew it when they get out of this field in the collegiate and go to a private setting. It's just like that plumber you talked about. He may be a good plumber, but he better know how to run a business.
Yep.
And so a lot of things in there of life, how you started. And it every strength coach has a story.
Great. And
one of adversity. That movie's not great without – it's great when you know how somebody overcame adversity. Bill Gillespie told my daughter last weekend he traveled 4 days from Washington State on a bus, 4 days on a bus to get to Liberty. He wanted to be there so bad.
Wow.
Every coach has a story. Thank you for writing CEO Strength Coach. If you don't have a copy, guys, get one, whether you're in the collegiate field. I can't say enough about it. So thank you, Ron.
Appreciate that, Coach. I paid him to say that, guys. Well, Coach, I'll tell you, you know, I wrote in that book, I think there's even a chapter, you know, you stand on the shoulder of giants. And
amen.
You are a giant in this profession. You're a giant. I mean, it doesn't go from guys making $9,000, $21,000 a year, you know, when people, like you said, I mean, you know, Bear Bryant, you know, other guys were looking at strength and conditioning as bad for sport, you know, at a time, to now where it's such a critical piece of the equation. And, you know, and now you got guys making $500,000 doing what we do, you know, and it doesn't happen without guys like you that have the vision, that have the passion, that fought a lot of battles along the way. And I'm just truly appreciative of you being that in the profession, but also being that as a human being, and just being so open and honest and helping to guys like me that came behind you. And
No, Ron, listen, I thank you. I'm flattered that you would have me. I'm happy for those guys that are they're reaping the rewards, and that's good. That's in every profession. Every big profession works that way. So, no, I want to thank you. I hope we meet up again soon. We saw each other at the Sornets Clinic, and a couple, I guess, was, you know, 6 months, seven, I can't remember, but I hope we meet up again soon. I'm going to say this. I hope you don't mind. Will you be there at the NSCA convention in Charlotte?
Yeah.
I hope to see you there.
Yeah, I'm speaking this year.
Good, good. I haven't seen the speakers on. List.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what I'm speaking on, to be honest with you, but I'll be there.
That's great. I look forward to it, my friend.
Thanks so much, Coach. Really appreciate you.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Ron.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.